Random House Audio presents The Essential Engineer: Why Science Alone Will Not Solve Our Global Problems by Henry Petrosky. This is Mark Deakins. Preface. I am a faithful reader of Science Times, the Tuesday feature section of the New York Times, but I have often wished that it were called something more precisely descriptive, for the section is about more than just science. On a typical Tuesday, about half of the section's content relates to health. Sometimes there are even stories about engineering. Both medicine and engineering do use scientific knowledge and methods to solve relevant problems, but neither of them is simply an applied science. In fact, the practices of medicine and engineering are more like each other than either is like unqualified science. Medical doctors and engineers both welcome all the relevant science they can muster, but neither can wait for complete scientific understanding before acting to save a life or create a new life-saving machine. Nevertheless, the word science is commonly understood to include medicine, engineering, and high technology. Science is clearly a useful shorthand for a wide range of activities, but it also obscures the differences between them. It gives science a primacy that it may or may not deserve. This book seeks to illuminate the differences between science and engineering, and thereby clarify their respective roles in the worlds of thought and action, of knowing and doing. In particular, it focuses on how they can interact to define and solve some of the most interesting and pressing problems of our time: how to address climate change, clean and renewable energy, and other global threats and challenges. Some of the material in this book appeared first, in somewhat different form, in my regular columns in American Scientist, the magazine of Sigma Xi, the Scientific Research Society, and in AC Prism, the magazine of the American Society for Engineering Education. I first drafted the manuscript in Maine during the summer of 2008, drawing many of my examples and case studies from contemporary and near-contemporary events, as reported in the New York Times and elsewhere. Among the resources that were most helpful to me in identifying relevant stories were the daily summaries of news distributed via email by Sigma Xi, Science in the News, the American Society for Engineering Education, First Bell, and the American Society of Civil Engineers, ASCE, Smart Brief. I am grateful to the anonymous scanners of the news who produce these excellent digests. The final version of the manuscript was completed in Durham, North Carolina, during the fall of 2008 and winter of 2009, at which time I added further examples and made the material current as of then. However, I believe that the underlying principles upon which this book is based are independent of when it was written. It is a book about science and engineering, those uniquely human endeavors that will continue to shape and not follow the news of the day. As always, I am indebted to my wife, Catherine Petrosky, for taking time from her own work to be my first reader and thoughtful assistant. And I am pleased that my relationship with the publishing house of Alfred A. Knopf continues even after the retirement of my longtime editor and friend, Ashbel Green, to whom this book is dedicated. This is my 10th book with Knopf, and my first with my new editor, Andrew Miller. It has been a pleasure getting to know Andrew and working with him on this project. And as I have come to expect, my experience with Ellen Feldman and the entire production team at Knopf has been superb. Chapter 1. Ubiquitous Risk. Our lives and those of our children and grandchildren are constantly at risk. Hardly a day passes, it seems, when there is not a story on television or in the newspaper about some new threat to our health and safety. If it is not toys decorated with lead-based paint, then it is drugs, not just pharmaceuticals, but something as commonplace as toothpaste, containing adulterated ingredients, or even milk contaminated with industrial chemicals that found its way into candy sold around the globe. Risk and reassurance are two key considerations of the activities of science, engineering, invention, and technology, collectively often referred to simply as science, or science and technology. Whatever they are called, they play a critical role in modern civilization, being essential for the advancement of society and the protection of our quality of life. It is these human disciplines associated with discovery and design that help separate the good from the dangerous on the farm and in the factory, at home and at the office, and on battlefields and frontiers. While science and technology can be misused and become the source of ruin, we would be at even greater risk from tainted products and contagious diseases were it not for the benevolent use of what are among the achievements that make us most distinctly human. If science and technology are two-edged swords, they are also the essential weapons in detecting and managing everyday risk. The bad milk that caused so much consternation a couple of years ago originated in China, which is among the largest exporters of food and food ingredients in the world. In order to increase quantities and thus realize greater profit, unscrupulous participants in the food supply chain misused chemical engineering to water down and adulterate milk. However, diluted milk, being lower in protein, can easily be detected by standardized testing employing well-established technology. But by adding inexpensive melamine, a chemical rich in nitrogen that is used in producing fertilizer and plastics, the adulterated milk could be made to register a higher protein level. Some of the tainted milk found its way into baby formula, causing tens of thousands of children to become ill, with at least 6 infants dying. This happened because melamine does not dissolve easily in the body and in higher concentrations can produce kidney stones and lead to kidney failure. The widespread presence of melamine in Chinese food products, including cookies and yogurt, led to worldwide recalls. Melamine had also been used as a cheap filler in pet food, causing many cats and dogs to become seriously ill. The chemical was additionally suspected to have been used in other animal feed, which caused chickens to produce melamine-tainted eggs. China promised to crack down on such practices, going so far as to sentence to death some of those responsible for the criminal activity. But the incident prompted a nagging skepticism that soon there could be some other tainted import that we would have to worry about. The Chinese milk scandal is a striking example of the use and misuse of science and technology, and of the tragic consequences that can result. In themselves, science and technology are neutral tools that help us understand the world and allow us to work with its resources. People, however, are not necessarily neutral participants, and they can use their scientific understanding and technical prowess for good or ill. It may be that those who added melamine to diluted milk thought they were only being clever exploiters of chemistry. The unfortunate consequences of their actions were, of course, beyond mere venality, and ironically, the very same science and technology that served as tools of deception were also used to uncover the plot. Like risk itself, science and technology and their effects are ubiquitous. It is not just potentially harmful products from abroad that can give us pause. Not long ago, E. coli contaminated spinach from California proved to be the culprit in the deaths of 3 people and the illnesses of hundreds of Americans who trusted domestically grown and harvested produce. A few years later, salmonella-tainted tomatoes were believed initially to be responsible for causing hundreds of people in dozens of states to become ill. For a while, the root of the problem, which spread through 41 states and affected more than 1,000 people, was believed to be in Florida or maybe Mexico. When no source was found in either of those agricultural locations, however, the public was told that perhaps tomatoes were not the source after all. Maybe it was fresh jalapenos, or something else. 6 weeks after advising people not to eat tomatoes, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration lifted the advisory without reaching any definite conclusion about the origin of the salmonella. It was not that science and technology were inadequate to the task. It was that there were no reliable data trails pointing to the various hands through which the bad food had passed on its way to the supermarket. When the guilty bacterium was finally found in a Texas distribution plant, its ultimate origin could not be traced. Unfortunately, such elastic and inconclusive warnings inure us to risk. Not long after the tomato jalapeno incident, peanut products containing salmonella were traced to a processing plant in Georgia. In the years preceding the discovery, the plant had been cited repeatedly by the State Department of Agriculture for health violations, ranging from unclean food preparation surfaces to dirty and mildewed walls and ceilings.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?